Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. We have a guest scheduled for tonight. By the way, this is, in case you haven't looked at a calendar in the last week or even today, June the 10th on the West Coast, now June the 11th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Tonight's guest is in transit. He is an attorney, and he had some work to do out of town from where he lives normally in New York City, and we're hoping he arrives any moment. So in the meantime, I'm going to continue as if I have something planned. Actually, I was planning on asking him some questions in regard to what's going on in terms of the law, the Constitution, big business, and of course, as usual, when Carl Pearson is on the show, we talk about solutions, and he's got some very innovative solutions for people to become empowered on a local level. We're talking about things such as performing tasks within the realm of what you normally would do for a living or what you're interested in doing for a living, maybe something that you've never been able to do, and you can earn a decent living, certainly making something between $25,000 and $50,000 a year performing tasks and without any withholding on those tasks. Certainly, you could benefit financially from that, and it's certainly better in most cases than not having any income whatsoever. You would be able to meet certain needs of your family, and with what is going on in the financial world today, it is mandatory that we come up with some creative solutions, and that's what Carl has been doing. He set up some websites. In fact, this man has over 100 websites that each one dealing with a specific issue, either in the law or in terms of putting ideas out there for people. His lawmall.com website is very popular. Carl ran for the New York State Attorney General's position, did not get it. But he came up with the concept of a local attorney general, having a local attorney general fighting for the people all around the country. Of course, he can't do this by himself. He's doing what he can to recruit some people. He uses the example of hopeless Indiana and coming to the rescue of that town, helping the town to recoup funds that have been lost, funds that have fallen by the wayside, intentionally or through the incompetence of the local officials, fighting corruption, fighting the big business that's eating up the family-owned businesses around the country and really around the world. Antitrust law is an expertise, and he's gone against some of the big companies and won. He's an extremely brilliant man. We're hoping he comes on board. In the meantime, I'm going to invite folks that would like to talk about things that are going on, particularly things that have been happening on this show in the recent past, we'll say, starting with May 29th when we got the call from General Jeremiah of the United Galactic Federation. I've had a lot of people ask if that was for real. As we clearly stated on the show, it wasn't a spoof. It wasn't a practical joke. We're not asking anyone to believe us. Those of you who are ufologists or follow ufology can tell you that that was a very momentous yet serious occasion, his appearance on this show. He took a great risk at doing that. And he is still at risk, as is the Federation, because they're here to witness what's going on in the Earth. People from all over our galaxy are here. And it's quite a different story than what we've been taught in school. It's quite a different story from what you've been told by the media. Quite a different story from what you may have read in a novel, and quite a different story from what we're being told about NASA and the space program and Project SETI and all of these different names that they come up with. We could go into a very detailed history of JPL, for example. It's an organization, a scientific organization, that is part of the space program, and it's also part of Ordo Templi Orientis, a satanic group. Jack Parsons was a big member in that group, and JPL has a lot to do with that mindset, we'll say, and those practices. It's a fact. It's a fact, and anyone that knows the organization and has studied these things knows that that's going on. And you come to an understanding of it. We're not telling you this to scare you. There are spiritual forces at work here, folks. And we do have people that are in a position to help us. If help is what you seek, there is a place to turn. You've heard us on shows talk about God, the Creator, and names are personal issues with people. We've had Judy Gray on this show, and she talks to God, and God has blessed her, and she knows of Jesus, and God likes to use the name Anderson when he talks to her, and she calls him Anderson because he asked her if she would use that name. Now, that's a stretch for a lot of people. There are those out there that are going to say, oh, wait a minute, that's blasphemy, that's sacrilegious. But this is her relationship. She has a personal relationship with the Creator. And she honors Christ. And the message, the basic message that General Jeremiah brought, is that the Federation looks for planets that honor Christ, that acknowledge Christ, that have accepted Christ into their lives. And they go to God through the Son. They go to the Father through the Son. It's written in the Bible, and it's something that is a conviction, and it's a faith, and it's a trust. And it transcends, really, it transcends a belief system. When you have a relationship with Christ, or you have a relationship with God, you know it. You see it in your life. And I can tell you that I have been very blessed, almost in a cursed way, because the web traffic has been just awesome, and I have to consider getting more bandwidth to just to facilitate, and to keep the quality of a website that I would like to have. I don't have all the bells and whistles that you find on a lot of websites, but you can pretty much find the information in a pretty simple fashion. We talked about that last night. I sort of went on a rant because I've got a lot of people asking me to do their legwork for them. And all you're at your computer. Push your buttons. Click your mouse. Use your head a little bit, okay? And it'll work out fine. You'll actually learn something, and you'll empower yourself. So I can't do it all things for all people. I'm spending time putting together part 7 now of the Three Stooges Go to Washington article, where I'm connecting all the dots of all the people, all the characters, all the players in this saga of a man that still has not proven where he is from, and he's leading this country. Now, if he was doing that with integrity, I wouldn't have a problem with that, but there are a lot of things that I dispute and I have issue with, and more people every day around the world are coming to the same conclusion. I was given a gift to see the character of this person, and I was right. In fact, I'm being proven more right every time he opens his mouth, every time he pushes a piece of paper or grabs a pen or a pencil and writes something down, signs some document, every time he's soliciting someone to steal your money or money that we don't have, every time he creates debt out of thin air and assigns it to the money that they create out of thin air. I had a conversation with a dear friend this evening, and this is a very sensitive topic about this corruption. It doesn't want to speak about it. And to me, in a sense, it's sad that people are so quick to turn off their mind. They don't want to face reality. They don't want to accept responsibility for even supporting a person that's lacking morals and lacking character, lacking the integrity. Someone that will tell you that they're going to bring peace and they're ramping up the war. So the point I'm making here is we all have opinions about things and we all discern what is going on in our own way, and we're not to be faulted for that. We're not to be faulted for that. Just like I don't like to be faulted for someone disagreeing with what I've discovered through my research. But I will not publish it. I will not print it if it's going to require you to believe what I say. It should become very apparent, very clear that what I write or what I say on this show is the truth, the best that I know it. And if I make a big mistake or I blunder, I will admit it to you. And my guests do the same thing. We often have conversations where they bring up a name or some topic I'm not familiar with, and often I bring up one or some facts that they're not familiar with, and we have to be willing to listen and expand our consciousness, and you don't get that when you cop an attitude about the nature of the information. That's part of the reaction when you're under mind control, and we talk about mind control all the time on this show. The most difficult thing topic to speak to someone about when they're under mind control is mind control. They don't want to hear it because they've been conditioned subliminally. They're automatically, all their defenses go up because they've been conditioned and they're not even aware of it. So that we can't fault them for that. We can only keep trying to awaken people. And those of you out there that consider yourselves awake can be doing that with the people you know and the people with whom you come into contact. That's how we work together. That's what the Galactic Federation is doing. Okay, this is many people go to the ufology websites and they look at video and they read about abductions and read about craft, look at pictures, look at videos, watch NASA television. You know that there's more life out there than what we've been told. And the only reason anyone would not tell you the truth is because they want you to give your power to them. You see, we are powerful beings. The way God created us, we are very, very powerful. So powerful that they have to be secret about everything they do as a means of getting past our power or circumventing our power or nullifying our power, because they don't want us to know these things. And if they don't want us to know these things, you have to ask yourself, why? Why wouldn't they want us to know it? They run schools where we get educated. Well, you get indoctrinated and propagandized. You get the information that they want to give you. It's, you might as well put on blinders like a horse. When you're taking a horse around automobiles, those of you that have ever ridden a horse, you know that they can be extremely sensitive and fidgety, and even fearful or apprehensive around motor vehicles, especially loud motor vehicles, or they can be frightened by something that they see. So you put blinders on them, and they have a tendency to calm down and trust that you're not going to lead them into harm's way. You have to hold on to the reins anyway. And the point I'm making here is that we have blinders on, and some of us have on earplugs. How do you expect to cope with your life? Why would you walk around looking at things and put earplugs in your ears and not hear what's being said? And when you do hear the truth, why do you turn off to the truth? What frightens you about hearing the truth? Is it that you have to face what's happening and you have to become conscious, or you have to take responsibility? Well, tell me how irresponsibility warrants help from outside, from another planet, or from a federation of 574 planets. Someone explain that to me, how an apathetic, irresponsible, don't give a damn attitude is warranting being helped, even by God. God made us powerful beings, all of us, and we are spiritual beings, those of us who are human. We are spiritual beings, and I can tell you, animals have spirits too. Animals are spirits, embodied in 3D, just like we are. And plants have spirit. They have intelligence too. They certainly know what season it is, and they know when it's safe to produce leaves and flowers and fruit or vegetables. They know this. And there's not a thing in the world that we can tell them that changes their ability to know that. In fact, they are so smart that they can tap into our energy and they can produce what we need once we learn how to communicate with them. And it's very simple how it's done. So we take many, many things for granted, and if we have become like infants, like newborn infants in many ways. I see a grown adults unwilling to talk about the world's problems or this country's problems. And for those of you around the world who are listening, I'm talking about here in the United States. Those people that are so spoiled or so driven to become rich so that they can gather material possessions, or rich that people will give them their power, you see, because that's what we're taught. We're taught those that have money have power. They only get the power if you give it to them, because, as I remind you in a listening audience, especially here in America, our money is an illusion. It's made out of thin air. It has no value. In fact, it represents debt. When you're holding a dollar bill in your pocket, you're actually holding a debt instrument. Well, you say, well, I can go out and buy a cup of coffee. Well, not even that anymore. You can't even buy a cup of coffee for a dollar, unless you're buying coffee beans or coffee grounds in bulk to make the coffee, to brew the coffee in your home or someplace like a campground or on a boat. But we put this value on having money, and I'm not saying that having money is a bad thing. It's how people use it or what it represents. Somehow when someone has a large wad of money in their pocket and they're walking down the street, they feel big, they feel important. And how do you feel when all that money's gone? How big do you feel? How important do you feel as you struggle to get more of it? And sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't. So our value systems are based upon what they prefer we focus them on, so that we give them our power. It's time we take our power back, or we reclaim our power, or in the case, those of you that don't think you've given it away, if you've got to struggle to make ends meet financially, or you're not in a position to take a vacation, and I don't mean go on a boat and do like a robot what a bunch of other people are doing. I mean making a creative decision about some adventure, some new experience, something that you might learn from, something that will empower you, something that will improve your health, something that will improve your attitude or your spirit, something that will teach you something about another culture. There's nothing wrong with learning about other cultures. There's nothing wrong about learning to speak a foreign language. I speak several languages, and I'm hoping to learn some galactic languages. By the way, coming back to that, just for a moment, I found out that that there's a team, they're from the Meta scientific team, and they're from the planet Gimpal. And I want to welcome those people. They're listening to Evident Footprints. We heard this from General Jeremiah, that there were some 2,000 planets in our galaxy that are getting the broadcast of this show by some means. I don't know that it's live all the time, but they are getting that message. And I've got a caller. I've got a surprise caller on the line. I'm going to take a call. I welcome the call this night, especially in light of Carl Pearson's absence right now. We have Drew from Arkansas. This has to be Drew Raines. Is that who this is?
Well, I'm not calling from outer space, but I'll tell you this much. You hit the nail on the head a minute ago when you were saying about spirits. I hate to go. There's such a delay coming to me to go back to, for me to call in to get back on track. Don, when you made the comment that we're spirits and animals are spirits and plants are spirits, you hit the nail right on the head with one branch of my family tree. A lot of Americans don't realize they have several branches of their family tree. Mine goes into the Tartars of Russia, but on one side of the family, and on another side of the family, it goes to the American Indian Sioux tribes of the Plains Indians. And on that branch of the tree, the American Indians used to sit and what we would call pray. They would give homage to the spirit of the animals when they kill the animals to put food on the table, and they did the same thing when they picked berries and as well as wild vegetables in the forest to live and live off of. They did it even on fish when they caught the fish in the rivers and streams. So we look to the American Indians, they were closer to the one creator of the entire universe than we were as civilized white people from Europe. What do you think?
Oh, yes. You know, honoring, you know, in some parts of the world, it's almost like the body needs, or certain people need to eat meat, okay? They're healthier if they do that. And I'm not saying people have to be vegans. You know, they don't have to be vegetarians just eating fruits and nuts. Ultimately, that would raise the vibration of any living person. If you could teach carnivores to eat fruit and vegetables, they would raise their own vibration too. And eventually, I was just going to say they wouldn't need to eat meat, but that is interesting, and I agree with you. You honor the spirit of the being, and it certainly makes it something of a spiritual nature, a higher vibration by doing so.
And I agree with you on your observation that there are some people on this earth that feel they have to eat meat and only meat, or they have to have 90% of their diet is meat. But I look at the fact that I was mostly, I wouldn't say mostly a meat eater, but I would say 40% of my daily diet intake was at one time meat. And I've been off of a daily intake of meat. Now, I'm not a vegetarian, Don. Don't get me wrong. I do sit down and eat a good steak, and eat fish, lots of fish. I eat a lot of specific fowl out there, meaning birds. But to eat meat like I did when I was a young man, before I started looking at living to eat healthier, Like my diet now, it's only got about maybe 10% to 20% maximum of a meat diet, and the rest of it is vegetarian. And products like eggs, I eat a lot of eggs, and my friends tell me I'm going to die of a heart attack because of the cholesterol in eggs, and I say, wait a minute, God put this here for me, and I pray over my food, and I enjoy not eating a lot of meat. I feel a lot healthier. I don't look near as old as most of my friends. I've got one friend that was born on the same day as I am, and he looks 15 years older than me. But he eats a lot of meat. And basically on the medium well side, or to the, on the raw side of medium.
Well, we're not being told the whole truth about cholesterol either. And I know that some people have issues digesting certain types of protein or certain fats. And, if you're just eating and sitting around and having a sedentary lifestyle, you're going to put on weight. I just found out that we have our guest. So, Drew, stay in the line for a moment.
I can go.
No, stay on the line for a moment. I want to introduce you to this gentleman anyway. before we let you go, but I really appreciate you calling in. And you're going to be on the show when? Tomorrow, right?
According to my little itsy-bitsy calendar over here, it says the 11th. No, I'm not going to be on tomorrow. I'm going to be on tonight.
Well, yeah, we're now in our time zone. You know what I'm saying. I'm still speaking to the people on the West Coast. So,
I understand that.
You're my next guest after Carl's show tonight. But let me bring Carl on, and I'll let you two say hey to each other, okay? Carl Pearson, are you with us?
Yes, I am, and I say hello. How are you doing? I'm sorry that I'm late. I've had
hello, Carl. You eat hay too, huh?
Yes. How are you doing?
That's Drew Raines.
Thank you, sir.
Drew Raines, meet Carl Pearson. Carl, Drew Raines.
Drew, hi.
Drew is a former U.S. Marine, and he's got a talk show, and he's a fantastic researcher. He knows a lot about history, and he's doing some really great work around the world.
Hold it. I don't know a lot about history. I research history to make sure what my teachers taught me is true, and what if those that didn't teach me the truth, I find out real fast, and I correct them.
God, we need more like you, because things have really gone awry in this country.
Yeah. Well, Drew, I'm going to let you go here.
You couldn't have said it any better.
We're going to talk.
This is a great show. I'm out here in the background listening. Don, you have a great show. God bless. Carl, you keep Don on the straight and narrow.
Oh, I will try. He's great.
Okay. God bless. See y'all later. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care, Drew. Okay, Carl. Welcome. I'm glad you could make it.
I was just sort of winging it,
and Drew called in to sort of chime in. We were talking about a lot of different things. Just for your information, we're heard on 2,000 planets around our galaxy.
Wow.
This is some recent information that came on a show May 29th, and I posted a documentary video of that broadcast, that portion of the broadcast, on my website, and thousands of people have already looked at it, and it's being rebroadcast several times a day around the world.
Wow, that's pretty good.
So, I thought you would be interested at least in looking at it. It's going to really open your eyes as to what's going on here. Anyway, let's come down to earth for a moment and talk a little bit about, I want to spend more time talking about the concept of the town attorney general. I've already informed my listening audience about some of the work that you've been doing, and I mentioned Hopeless Indiana, and we're looking, for ways to empower the people, and I want to give you the mic for a couple of minutes here and explain some of these ideas that you've brought forward. We have new listeners all the time, so you know we may be repeating something, but I think people sometimes need to hear the message more than once till it sinks in.
Well, going back to about 2003, I was thinking that what's happening in this country is that we're not able to enforce the rights of individuals. We seem to be losing our rights. And the bigger companies, the big people, the rich, seem to control the institutions that we have that would try to protect the rights of individuals. So I said, well, you know, if we can't have an attorney general at the state level to really look after the rights of individuals in thousands of different towns and villages and counties in a given state, in a large state or any state, why not have the office of the attorney general put down at the local level and really become the new sheriff in town? Instead of having a sheriff with a gun, we have more demanding problems that we've seen in America. We have people that are stealing our country. They're stealing our jobs. They're stealing our homes. They're charging usurious rates of interest. They're wrecking the economy. They're ruining us. And no one's doing anything to enforce that, to enforce the laws that would stop that. So my idea would be to have a local attorney general who would then go into court at government expense and start enforcing the rights that we have so that we don't lose more and more of our rights. So that was the thing that has driven me to try to find a way to have towns be willing to accept that new type of sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that if I could put a package together that would really be attractive to a town, that I could invite the town not only to accept these other attractive features, but to employ this concept of the town attorney general. The package that I put together was a package of four things. The first one is the town attorney general, that I'm offering any town or village in the United States for free. I don't make anything on this. I'm offering the opportunity to have the town become prosperous in spite of what's happening throughout the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing you need to have is to protect the people in the town so that they don't lose their money with a town attorney general, somebody that will enforce the laws, bring suit against the bad guys, and then we have extra money in the town when you bring suits. The attorney general in New York brought in $3 billion in the year 2003. $3 billion he brought in by really looking cross-eyed at people and saying, if you don't give me money, I'm going to sue you. He,
mm-hmm.
he didn't even bring suit. He just told people that I'm going to sue you unless you give us money. So at the local level, you can have enough money that you can raise from the people that have hurt the town to give free health care to the entire town. That's
now,
what you
if,
can do with
if
the
I
money.
Can chime in a moment here,
sure.
There are those out there listening. Well, if the Supreme Court is striking down cases, if they're refusing to listen to these cases, and they're doing this on a state level as well, what makes you think that on a local level you're going to be able to enforce these things? You know, you get judges dismissing lawsuits left and right. What is different about your plan that will make this work?
Well,
that's what I'm
number into. One, Spitzer didn't even bring suit, so the courts weren't even involved. He only threatened to bring suit. Number one.
Okay.
But number two is that when you have justified and costly and potentially disastrous litigation against a wrongdoer. For example, if somebody had sued Madoff from a town, Hopeless, Indiana, if somebody in Hopeless, Indiana had seen what was going on and figured out what to do and said, look, why don't we bring suit and try to get our money back, or try to bring suit and claim that he's an illegal, he's illegally operating, and try to recover our money. So Madoff would have paid. He would have paid people who had
brought suit early. Well, shouldn't we do this with this bailout?
Well, we could, but we don't have an attorney general anywhere. You only have it at the top, and that's all bought off.
Mm-hmm.
You see, our institutions are top-down, and when you have institutions that are top-down, they are beholden to the people that give them the money, and we have to fight that by creating these institutions at the bottom, at the lowest level where you and I live.
So you're saying then the corruption is at the top?
Of course.
Okay.
That's where the money is. That's they bought control of the country. Who is they? Well, I don't know who they are because they're not Americans. They're just international banks and others that control America, and they direct trillions of dollars. Some of the money went to Deutsche Bank. Are they an American bank?
Absolutely.
They got
not.
$50 billion. Are they an American bank? Why should we hand over $50 billion or something like that to Deutsche Bank? Well,
because
who are they in our chain of command?
Yeah, they're the caretakers of the Bush cabal's money.
Right. So why are we giving away the country to these foreign institutions that dominate us? And the reason is because they dominate us. They control our politics. They provide the money. They pay off the institutions that need to be paid off. The press, the main press. We've got to get away from that. And starting with law enforcement, we can have our own law enforcement official. But the towns up to now have only had a sheriff with a gun. And that isn't enough in the sophisticated day and age of today. You need a sheriff with a law book.
Yes,
so that's the town attorney general concept, to be able to bring suit against the wrongdoers using highly sophisticated legal concepts. You win some and you lose some. You're right that you don't win all the lawsuits. On the other hand, many of the lawsuits don't even get anywhere. They're settled.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll have our share of settlements, and we'll definitely, I assure you, you're right, we'll have our share of losses. But we're going to come out of this with enough money in any given town to provide free health care to the people that don't have it, to provide free broadband, to provide the cost for the free college, and to provide a reduction in rent and real estate taxes. That's what we can do for the town. Just for that one institution of a town attorney general to litigate instead of firing a gun, instead of looking for people that are passing the red light and fining them $20. What a ridiculous concept for these local towns when they could be putting a town attorney general in there to recover millions. What are these people, idiots?
Yeah,
they don't understand. You know, they're looking for $20 when they're losing $20 million.
Yes, in the case of the real estate fiasco that's occurring, and you know, we know that Countrywide Home Loan is a CIA operation, as is Bank of America, and Bank of America has taken over Countrywide, which is really the left hand and the right hand changing sides of the body, you know.
And Merrill Lynch. You might as well throw in Merrill Lynch.
Well, we could throw in Bear Stearns and Merrill Lynch and AIG and, you know, many of these companies. And there were more.
Right, and they handed themselves billions. They gave themselves billions.
Yes.
Well, what's going on here? Why don't they hand it to the people? They take it from the people and they give it to the rich. I don't understand it. Of course, I do understand it, that they're in control and they can do anything they want. So what we need to focus in on is how do we avoid that? And the answer, I think, is by working locally and trying to create prosperity at the local level with as little involvement on the part of the users, the monopolists and the usurers, the banks and credit card companies that charge usurious rates, and the monopolies. Try to have our activities local.
Okay.
And patronize
now, if
local
I can interrupt again, Carl,
sure.
you mentioned Deutsche Bank.
Yeah.
Okay, and we gave billions away to a German bank.
Yes.
People should be outraged by that. But further, and this is why I brought up this issue of the real estate, there are people who have been foreclosed upon and have had their homes taken away from them, and they're living out in some clandestine area out in the country or on the fringes of a town in a tent, if they're fortunate enough to even have a tent. What can be done about the illegal ownership of this foreign bank of our land, of our property? Because it's been, you know, it's because of these shenanigans, this embezzlement and these schemes and scams that are going on at the highest level that this has occurred. Can we,
okay,
on a local level, go into a city like Cleveland, Ohio, that had 2,000 homes illegally foreclosed on the owners? Three cases, which you're aware of,
have
won. But why aren't we going after all 2,000 of
Well,
you know,
here is this is what I really like to think of, let's say, as the Bush Supreme Court problem. That is, if you have somebody that claims to be president and really didn't win the election, the way we decide that in America is we let the highest court in the country render its decision. And if the decision is that, well, Bush is president, then what are you going to do? Because that decision is backed up by the military of the United States. That's the decision of the courts is ultimately backed up by the Army and the FBI and the Justice Department, the military authorities, the Coast Guard. All of that will come together to enforce decisions of the court. So if what you're saying is, or asking is, can we go into court and expect relief in certain areas? My feeling is no, we can't. So we have to try to do what's possible rather than what you would hope is ideally something we could do. Ideally, it would be great to go into court and know that we'll get justice, but we know that we don't do that. I've been in court too often to believe that some of these things that we're talking about can be cured merely by a lawsuit. I think we have to cure it from the ground up by changing our institutions and changing what we do in some of these areas. We're not going to get the court to turn back the $1 trillion, for example. No judge is going to order that all these banks pay back the $1 trillion, and especially mm-hmm. Deutsche Bank. I don't believe it's going to happen.
Would it be wrong for us to rename the U.S. Justice Department the U.S. We Don't Get Justice Department?
Well, I've urged that we eliminate the SEC, the FTC, the Justice Department, all the do-nothing agencies, that they basically pretend that they give whatever they're supposedly giving, when in fact it's only a deterrent so that the judges can say, well, if the government agency doesn't see a problem here, then why should the judge? Wouldn't it be better if we didn't have a government agency to block things, and that we only would go into court? If every one of us had the right to go into court and to seek justice there, because there is no other form of justice. The government agencies aren't giving it, so let's give up on the agencies. Let's not have them, because their presence is only an obstacle, and it's not worthwhile, as we've seen. They don't do what they're supposed to do. So maybe the courts are a better way of resolving it, letting you and me go into court if we see some wrongdoing. But there's a doctrine, basically, that these agencies have the sort of jurisdiction to determine things, and the rest of us aren't really permitted by law or by judges to go into court and change things, and that's wrong. We ought to have the right to litigate, but we really have very little right to litigate. But my feeling is that if we can take a town, we can create prosperity in a town and isolate ourselves from all these outrageous things to a very considerable extent. for example, do you have any idea what type of taxes a small business person pays? How much in taxes, income taxes, does the typical small business person pay?
Well, they're paying. It's going to depend on where they are. Number one, I mean, there is a basic sales tax that's they have on.
They don't pay the sales tax. They collect it. They don't pay it.
You're distorting a little bit on my end, Carl.
Okay,
the
small business person doesn't pay the sales tax; they collect it.
Yes, they collect it, but I mean they distribute it, and then in terms of what they pay out of their profits, I couldn't tell you. I would guess it could be anything from 35% to 50% of what they take in.
Let's start first of all with people that we know what they do. Let's take a middle manager in a bank. Let's say earning $75,000 a year. What does he pay in taxes per year?
Well, it's usually around 35%.
I'll buy that. Maybe 40 in New York. You know, we have every single agency around here wants money. County, the city, the state, and all these taxing authorities. So it's probably at least 40% in New York. So
and
if a person's earning $70,000, then you lose $28,000 in taxes right away.
Yeah,
but that's a person who's employed. Now let's take a person who's self-employed. What do you think the average self-employed person pays in taxes per year? You know what the answer is? Very little. Small business people generally don't have profits.
Yeah, they write off most of...
They write off.
Yeah.
So that if you have a town that has no employees and it has only small business people in it, what kind of taxes are they going to pay?
Well, if... very little, I would guess.
Very little.
Yeah.
That's encouraging, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the evils of the country you can sort of avoid if you're a small business person. And if you have a town of small business people, they get their income gross. They're small business people who are paid directly a full amount for their service, unlike the bank manager who sees a 40% deduction for his services.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm suggesting that small towns try to create prosperity for their residents by making it possible for the residents to engage in small business through the offering of tasks by the residents in registering in a database and then marketing that database to the 2,000 mile, square mile area that's around that town. And it can be done very inexpensively, and it will bring in $100 or $200 a day in income without tax deduction for each of the participants, I estimate. That's $50,000 a year without deduction for tax. And if you have people earning that kind of money, you're going to rest assured they will be paying their local bank the mortgage that the local bank is going to give them that doesn't have punitive late fees and punitive usurious rates of interest, because the people in that town will be too smart to deal with the usurers. And there will be plenty of business for the banks and the credit card companies that set up a decent operation. So we can avoid a lot of the charges that wipe out America generally by creating this kind of prosperity in a town. Having a free college, having a task marketplace to bring in income for the residents, having a town attorney general, and then having an area-wide payroll administrator to make it easier to actually have payroll and tax deductions and be able to qualify people for Social Security. There's no reason why people should give that up. So you still would have people being employed, and and you would want to make it easier for local businesses to employ people by having an area-wide payroll administrator. It's the people in a small business would understand why that would help them. Maybe those that have never owned a business wouldn't understand, but when you have actually had to meet payroll and you know the difficulties you go through in meeting payroll when you don't have any money, and the consequences and the trail of brown envelopes from government agencies following you for the next 10 years, you'll understand what I'm trying to do. But that's simple. Those four things are all you need to create prosperity in any town or village in the United States. And I want towns and villages to come forward and say, hey, we want that. We want prosperity. We are willing to become another hopeless Indiana, which hopeless Indiana means like you think it's hopeless, but it's not. You actually can do something within a small town to bring prosperity. What more do you want? What are you looking for? We have a nation of sheep here that, I mean, people aren't doing anything when it's there ready for them to take. I don't understand it.
Well, it's called mind control and brainwashing, and I'm not putting people down. I'm just saying that's what it is. That's the model that's been created. And a lot of it's on the subliminal level. And here you are addressing them consciously. You're addressing their consciousness. If they're awake, they're going to hear this and say, these people are thinking, well, how is the city going to provide a free college? Or how is the city going to even survive if nobody's paying taxes? How is that going to occur? Well,
the free college works like this, that if you strip out all of the inessentials to a college education, if you eliminate the library, if you eliminate the parking lot and the groundskeeper and the fountain and the dispensary, the food service, dormitories, all of those things cost a huge amount of money. If you strip a college down to the essentials, which is office space, 30 seats in a classroom, a blackboard, a teacher, and a curriculum. It costs $2,000 a year to give a college education. $2,000 a year is nothing compared to the $70,000 or $80,000 that many colleges are costing when they're distant colleges. It costs people maybe $80,000 a year, and that's after taxes. So if they pay 40% or say 50, they have to earn $160,000 to pay $80,000, when actually for a package of cigarettes a day and without taking out any student loans, you can provide a college equivalency program for the residents in the area. And you can raise that $2,000 through the Attorney General. So it really wouldn't cost people anything.
Yeah. Now, other than the expenses that you described, I guess you have to have swans in the local lake around the fountain too. You know, there are a lot of bells and whistles that go along with the average, let's say, state college education costs, and then the private colleges, for the most part, are even more. But where are the rest of those costs incurred? And I don't feel that it's all in the tuition of the professors. What's the hidden cost?
Well, when you're going to a distant school, you have travel expenses, and you have sometimes like a vehicle, and you have living expenses that are away from home. You have just higher costs plus the tuition that may be $30,000 a year, $35,000 a year. So if you say that your cost is $50,000 a year, it takes you $100,000 of net of income to pay $50,000. So people can't afford college. They wind up taking out student loans, and then they can't pay off the student loans, and they become servants, slaves for a long period of time because you can't go into bankruptcy for student loans. So the whole system is excessive. The people that get into this don't understand what's going on. The persons who get the money are different. They enjoy getting the student loan money. That's a lot of money, and it pays great salaries. Like at Harvard Law School, I've calculated a Harvard Law professor gets $2,000 an hour for teaching.
Mm-hmm.
That they teach 100 hours a year, and I estimate their salary is $200,000. So that's $2,000 per hour of teaching. Of course, they're given office space, and they have secretaries, and they have other opportunities of earning money by their presence in the college. They get expert witness fees and the consultations and other things like that. But the basic instruction, they teach 100 hours a year, and they get $200,000. So that's $2,000 an hour. In my school, as I see it, and I've had 18 years of ownership of a school at the college level, ownership, running it, you can pay people $20 an hour, and they're happy to provide the teaching service. People will work for $20 an hour.
Yeah.
Ask your audience whether they would like a job at $20 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Some would and some wouldn't. But you don't want to hire the ones that don't want it. There's too many people that want $20 an hour.
Well, and then there are some people out there that may not, they may not even go through the computation to figure out that possibly stepping down and being part of this system that you're describing would actually put them in a better position than if they were collecting that higher salary.
Well,
you know, in terms of the end result.
I think, yes, if you are stuck working for somebody that you don't really enjoy, but it is a job because you're afraid to venture out on your own, and you therefore adopt the blue vest of Walmart and get $8.50 an hour. I mean, my God, working for $8.50 an hour, you can't support a family. But then nobody intended them to support a family. That wasn't the idea of Walmart. Walmart was to have people support Walmart by having the costs of Walmart externalized so that everyone else pays for Walmart except Walmart. So that Walmart
mm-hmm.
basically gets a free ride. It hires people for virtually nothing. If they get sick, they go on the public health care so that the taxpayer in the town has to pay for the health care of the workers. They have the town pay for the cost of preparing new roads that lead up to Walmart. That's
mm-hmm.
an externalization of the cost. They're great at doing that. And they provide...
Sorry, I thought you were finished.
Well, they provide a low cost, which you can go into the store and buy goods at low cost, and in doing so, you're slitting your throat of your neighbor who's losing his job as a result of your purchase.
Now, let's take it a step or a notch higher, okay, in the case of something that's going on and the role of the Attorney General in coming into town where jobs are lost. Let's say, for example, that person that would want to market his skills has a job with a company that is claiming they're bankrupt and then receives billions of dollars and turns around a couple of weeks later and says again that they're bankrupt. What can the Attorney General in the hopeless Indiana GM plant do?
I would put in claims if there's a bankruptcy. I would put in claims for the town, so that and individuals in the town put in claims in bankruptcy. I would consider throwing the people into bankruptcy that are doing this. If they're claiming bankruptcy, why not make an involuntary bankruptcy? Throw them into bankruptcy and let a court determine whether they have the money to pay or not, and how much they should pay. There's legal maneuvers here that people don't do because they don't have legal advice. The only thing you know in a small town is zoning. Zoning is the way that you have been able to shaft competitors. You elect people, and then you start zoning and rezoning, and you have petitions for zoning, and all the while your money is being stolen by the sophisticated people from Wall Street. You're mm-hmm. worried about zoning with your local land, and the money is being taken away from you. Not the land, but the money, the investments, the stocks and bonds and opportunity and jobs and everything you're losing as you're there protecting your zoning. The people are crazy when they don't understand how they're losing their country and their value, because it isn't all zoning. It's banking. It's securities. It's antitrust. It's other things. The federal issues, big federal issues, they're losing their country by the non-enforcement of these laws that we have.
Okay. Now let's take it a notch higher. I haven't heard anyone say this. We hold the media to a standard, right?
Yes.
They present themselves as if they're being honest. And you and I know that if this, what you're describing is going on, and that they're not reporting it, I'm speaking about mainstream media because we expose this every night on this show. If they're complicit in the commission of crimes, and they're knowledgeable about it, and they're not reporting it to any authorities, nor to the public, which they claim to serve, then can they not be sued for their corrupt activity?
Years ago, I think my first lawsuit was I brought a complaint. It wasn't a lawsuit. I brought a complaint. It might have been a lawsuit. It might have been a complaint. I forget what it was, but against the New York Times, because they said that it's all the truth that fit the print. And it's obvious that they don't print the truth, and not all of it, certainly. Or any of it.
Tell me what they did print that was true. I'm interested. We'll invite that reporter on the show.
Yeah. So they for years, they haven't done anything. They haven't printed the truth, and they get away with it. Don't forget, the people in power define what is criminal and what is not. So they define what their own activities as not being criminal, but that the rest of the world is criminal. I mean,
can't they be sued, though? I mean, is that an option?
Because you can always bring a suit, but what would the judges do if you brought a suit against President Obama because he gave away money, $1 trillion? What do you think that a local judge would do, a federal judge?
Well, I understand that you're laying the groundwork, but if you can show that the media is, if you can give examples, you see, because you're talking about discovery here, right? And that gives us the opportunity to present the truth, as we know. The records, the financial records are known. Names are known. The phony documentation, there's a computer trail that can be traced back 100 transactions.
You're assuming that because you're proving that you're right, that a judge automatically has to accept what you say and give you justice. It doesn't work that way.
You can't do that with the local media? I mean, if you can sue a local corporation, is the media not a corporation?
Yeah, but what's your claim?
My claim is that they're making fraudulent statements to the public, and you can prove the fraud with the actual documentation.
How are you losing money? They'll say you don't have standing. It isn't libelous to you.
They're aiding and abetting the corruption that's taking place.
But that corruption isn't hurting you. You can't prove your direct financial involvement. You're only one out of...
Oh, yes, it can be proven. If they extract taxes and then they steal public funds and gamble it in Wall Street, certainly that's theft.
Actually, I brought a taxpayer lawsuit to try to stop the building of the stadia, the Yankee Stadium and the Mets Stadium. I brought that about 8 years ago, 6 years ago.
That's like bringing a lawsuit against God.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I did it on the grounds that the money that was being spent was money that under the New York State Constitution, there is no power to hand over money to a corporation. There's a state constitutional provision that prohibits the payment of money to a corporation by the state. It has to be made available to all. You can't just hand it to a few. So they admitted that at a public hearing, that I was right in that, but what they do is that they lend money to other organizations. They have an indirect way of doing it, and they've been getting away with it.
Yes.
So I wanted
those
to,
are the types of things I'm talking about.
Yeah, well,
if they collect a tax for the wetlands, and I'm just being very general, all the wetlands around Hopeless, Indiana, they collect a tax to keep it clean, to monitor what's going on, create a few jobs of people that administrate this whole thing.
I think you could bring a suit in that area. I think that would be a suit that is a killer. If you have a killer type of suit, one that is so devastating that the courts would be reluctant to hold, for example, that that Bank of America. In other words, if you filed a lawsuit against Bank of America and claimed that they have to give back all of that money with interest right away, the courts are not going to do it, you know? I mean, you just have to sense that it doesn't matter that you're right. They're just not going to do it. You can only push a court so far. But in what you're saying, a wetlands thing, where they're creating a taxing district and they're putting in people with jobs and the local people don't want it, they're just getting taxed away and they're eating up their money. I think that's
they're secretly or clandestinely, covertly selling off public land to private individuals.
Well, I think that we're more attuned to that now than ever before, and I think that you could do something with that at a local level. I believe that would be a lawsuit that would, that's a starter. You got something there.
And the reason I bring that up, because that's where they're getting the real money to do the scams on Wall Street and in the stock markets. That's why people have lost their homes.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
You know, speaking of losing homes, I have a video that I put on YouTube, and I have about 1,400 people that have seen it so far, which is amazing, I think. Yeah. But it's called Don't Pay Your Mortgage.
Yeah, why don't you go into that? We have maybe another 5 minutes here.
Okay, here's basically the problem. There's two types of states. From a mortgage standpoint, you have a state in which the bank does not go into court. They only sell your home out from under you, and they have the right to do that under a deed of trust. That's called a non-judicial foreclosure state.
Okay.
It happens quickly, and it's harder to stop. But in states like New York and Florida, and maybe a third of the other states, you have a judicial foreclosure as the rule normally, and there a bank has to go into court. And they give you notice that you're in default, and if you don't pay within a certain time, they'll file a foreclosure action against you. So what I tell people is this, that if you see that 6 months from now you won't be able to pay the mortgage, stop paying it today. Don't waste your money giving your hard-earned money and your baby's bank account or the savings. Don't give it to the bank. I mean, they're a bunch of thieves. Don't give them your last penny. If you see you're running into trouble, stop paying your mortgage in a judicial foreclosure state and invite the bank to foreclose on you. And in the judicial foreclosure state, you can then hire a lawyer because you now have some money. You're not paying the mortgage anymore. You're saving $3,000 or $4,000 a month. Hire a lawyer. Like, I can keep a person in the property for months and months, maybe years, for $500 a month. I can keep as a legal cost. I have to run to court every now and then and file motion papers, discovery, and stuff like that. But for $500 a month, I can keep a person in his home for a year, two, or three, probably 18 months or longer. The whole process takes probably over 2 years in many cases in New York. So what I say then is that take advantage of that. If you're going to lose your home to foreclosure anyway, invite it. Have it happen more quickly, and don't pay your last penny to the bank. Stop paying your mortgage. Now, if your home, especially if your home is underwater, where you don't really want to have to pay $300,000 over the years of principal, if your home is only worth $150,000 now, stop paying your mortgage. Know you're going to be evicted at some point, but 2 years later, you're going to ride out that property without paying for 2 years at $4,000 a month. You'll save $96,000. Use that to pay off your credit cards. Use a portion of it to buy someone else's problem at an auction. And you now have a lot of cash. You've got a new house that you can afford. You have no credit card debt. That's a hell of a thing in the judicial foreclosure states.
Plus, you can be making money by marketing your tasks, which is what we were, you know, talking about as a solution.
That is what needs to be done. I mean, they're forcing us into becoming small business people by removing jobs from America. They're not telling us what we need to do. They keep telling us that, don't worry, sooner or later there will be jobs. Well, I don't believe it. I think we're going to have to create our own jobs. And what's more natural than having all of us perform tasks that we can perform for others for money? Why not? Why do we have to wait for Walmart to tell us to open up a door for someone? Why should our tasks be created only when a huge corporation tells us to perform a task? I have tasks that I would like people to perform for me. I just can't find the people. I have problems all the time where I would like to get someone to help me out, but I don't know who they are. There's no database where you can find these people.
Mm-hmm. Now, a thought that's running through my head while you're describing that, and I'm paying attention to what you're saying. If people could be empowering themselves to earn money, and you may have, if it's a town that's making money, don't you think businesses are going to want to be located there? Do you think a new model might include
homes? There's only a limited number of homes. People will buy homes. The market will go up.
Yes.
What
I want to ask, Carl, do you think that by that occurring in that town and businesses coming in, would it not be prudent to put some requirements on the business, not for the purpose of controlling them so much as from keeping them from losing control themselves? In other words, they say, you ask the question, what kind of business do you anticipate doing on an annual basis? What is your gross revenue going to be? And then based on a particular gross revenue, you require them to hire so many people to be a part of the company from within the community. Okay.
I don't like that idea because it a business. I've gone into many businesses over my lifetime, and when I think of a business, I can't think of a business when I have to be constricted the way you're trying to create these parameters. My business is fluid. I don't know what it's going to be like until it works out. I have to adjust these things and start working on variables and try to figure out the name and the service that I'm going to offer, and then I adjust it. I can't deal with your variable of having to hire people. That throws me way off, and it will mean I will never do business in that town if I have to have that artificial restraint put on me at the very beginning. It's hard enough to start a business without complying with these new demands that you're thinking about. It's too much for me. It's too hard just to start a business.
Let me ask you this briefly before we sign off here. The reason I bring that up is because they give us these promises and they're never kept. And there's no way to, let's say if they make that statement, we're going to produce 300 jobs for the local community. In other words, tell us why we should allow you to bring your business into our community.
Well, you don't have any right to stop me. That's my point. I'm not asking for your money. But if I'm thinking of opening up an insurance agency in your town to try to find the lowest cost automobile insurance and life insurance and that, I'm not going to go into your town if you're going to put me through a lot of crap and force me into all sorts of things. That those licensing things are designed to keep newcomers out. They're designed to stop competition and to stifle it. Licensing stifles competition, and it's designed to enforce the monopoly of the existing people who demand licensing, not because they want it. They only want it to exclude others from competing with them. So licensing is something that you don't want. It's not that good. It stifles competition. There may be instances where you want people to be licensed if they're bringing atomic energy things into town or something like that. But just to have a person to become to set up a shop of repairing automobiles, you use the law to sue them if they're committing fraud. But this licensing crap, where you can withhold licenses, it leads to corruption. In New York State, we've had 30 years of corruption of issuing licenses for bars to sell liquor. There's always corruption there. Anytime you have people inspect and their word gives you the right to continue to make a lot of money, or if they withhold it, you have corruption potential. Rely upon a lawsuit. If things aren't working out, sue the people and take away their right to do business by going into court. But this licensing, where people sit there in a room as licensing authorities, I don't like that. It breeds corruption.
I'm thinking more on a scale of having, looking at building a community, and the people itself are its foundation in reality with the system that you're describing. And that any business that comes into town should be operating on the same level, is what I'm saying, with integrity. Now, if that's not done, there should be consequences. Let's say it's an organized crime ring of robbers and thieves, and they want to come into the town to conduct their corrupt business. I mean, you have laws in place to stop that. But it's not being stopped. It generates a lot of money through the court systems, through the legal system, and the prisons. And so the intention isn't to put an end to it. It's to cycle them through that and let them out again and repeat the process. We have to take a spiritual responsibility for where we are headed.
That's pretty strong medicine for you to set up a group of people in town. The top five business people are going to decide whether other businesses can come in and compete with them. That's really what it adds up to.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm looking at seeing if there's not a way to create a solution to that issue. You see?
I'm a free market person when it comes to having ideas be turned into businesses. You don't want restraints like that. You really want the freedom for people to create what's needed rather than what you and the town think is needed.
Is that different from what we have today, what you're describing?
Yeah.
Okay, so then we do have a problem with the way it is now. So it's to our advantage then to do this on a local level. If we're not doing it, these things aren't going to happen. I mean, that's very simple logic. If we make no attempt at it, we'll never know how it works.
We know that people can engage in small business, and we know that small business is the place that jobs are generated, whereas big business is where jobs are lost. How can we not want to create and foster small business?
I mean,
it's so obvious that this is what we should be doing. We don't need bailout programs and stimulus. All we need to do is recognize that small business is where the money is.
It's where the jobs are. It's what we need to be promoting, and we can do it through a task marketplace instead of looking around for people to hire people. We just have to offer tasks to fill needs.
Mm-hmm.
We create the jobs by a marketplace for tasks if the people that offer tasks think of what the world needs. We
mm-hmm.
don't need corporations to monopolize our services. That's where we stultify the whole economy. By having us run through Walmart before we can get a job, we have to convince Walmart that we have something that Walmart can offer the community. Why should Walmart be the gatekeeper for employment?
Yes, well, that's what I'm leading to. That's the whole reason for that, that if there are corporations there, that we should expect a certain type of behavior. Do we have to allow them to come in just because they decide?
Well,
I
would sue them for the wrongdoing, and they would hopefully get discouraged and leave.
Yeah.
But you could bring a suit to stop them from operating. You can get an injunction against them. If they're doing something that's bad and if it's critical in their business, get an injunction stopping them from having a concrete pavement where it's filled with crime every night, for example. I mean, I'm just making that up because I don't know if that's true. But if their concrete parking lot breeds criminal conduct every night, force them either to close it down or to have guards and cameras and lights and all that. That might drive the profitability of Walmart it might drive them out of business. If you impose that kind of curative action on their activities, it may drive them out of town anyway. You know what Walmart does and the others do? They play off one town against the other.
Mm-hmm.
Walmart comes into town A and says, look, we're going to set up this Walmart store, and if you don't allow us to do it, we are going to go 2 miles away, right across the town line, and set it up out of your taxing jurisdiction, and all the people from your town will be buying from us, and you won't get a cent. So the town says, oh, my God, we can't lose Walmart. We better take it before the town next door takes it. I have a solution for that, and that is, it's like not in my backyard, and that is require all towns or have the towns and counties enter into a revenue sharing agreement according to the credit card purchases at Walmart,
mm-hmm.
so that any revenues are shared according to how the purchases are made through credit cards, so that nobody has to have Walmart in their backyard. You can have it 2 miles away, let the other town take it, as long as
we
get our revenue.
It's a psychological ruse when they approach a town that way, because right now you don't have Walmart. I mean, why do they come to you? If they can set up 2 miles over the city or the corporation line, the incorporation line, why would they even bother not to do that anyway?
Because
they make
two towns compete with each other for offering the most externalized cost pickup. The more you say you'll mm-hmm. put in streets and lighting and cops and everything for them, they start adding that up, and their towns are competing with each other to kill themselves. They're fighting each other in order to commit economic suicide.
Yes. Yes, well, that's why I asked that question. You know, we want to let the listening audience know. Carl, we are out of time. I'm glad we were able to get you on the show tonight. Glad you made it back home safely. And I want to thank you for all this wonderful information. You know, I'm sort of playing either devil's advocate. I don't even like that
term.
Well,
you're bringing out the argument. You're trying to to bring out the issues here.
Yeah, and I do that because these are the things I hear people talk about all the time. And some of these questions I'm asking you are, I'm being a bit creative in looking at what's going on and saying this is not right. This is definitely in violation of the laws that are created, and we're expected to adhere to them. And we have to be strong and convicted in demanding that every, you know, these corporations and these banks and these government agencies, if they're going to exist, have to hold that same standard.
Well, here, let me tell you one last thing, and that is that the government isn't suing Google for a monopolization. They just don't get involved. They talk about it, and it deters other people. Do you know who is suing? Do you know the only person in the world who is suing Google for a monopolization? It's me. Why should it be me? Why am I the one that has to carry the burden of government? Why am I the government? Why is it that I have to do this? Where is our government? And I'm saying the government should be with the people and have a town attorney general paid by the taxes and start fighting the good fight at the local level. You need to have government financing of the kind of work that I do.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have me doing it for free. You need
yes.
to pay in a town to have somebody like me doing the work that you need to have done to maximize your town, to create prosperity. You need to protect what you have and let it grow, because they'll take it from you, and they've done it.
Now, you are convicted enough in this, and I have to close with this statement. You are convicted enough in this to offer this for free.
I'm offering it for free, because if I went into town and said, look, I'll make you prosperous, but give me a check for $40,000 first, they would never listen. They don't even listen to me when I say I'll do it for nothing. You know,
yeah.
People are immune to understanding what they need. They just somehow say somebody else will do it. If it's going to happen, it'll happen. Well, it'll happen if you make it happen. And we have the opportunity of doing it here. And I'm shocked and amazed that we don't have people running around saying, God almighty, what a great idea. Let's do it. It doesn't cost anything. Let's try it. Let's create prosperity in our town, because it's going the wrong direction now.
Yeah. Well, Carl, give your information to our listening audience for contact.
Pearson,
and I want to let them know you're going to be on also on the 25th of this month. But
yes.
Contact Carl and check this out. It doesn't cost a penny. What do you have to lose?
Right. So my phone number is 212-307-4444. And I need people to put me in touch with government officials in towns and villages below the size of 25,000. I can deal with that. It's harder to deal with large cities because it's harder to go door-to-door, which we need to do. So I need a smaller town or village, and we can create prosperity. And it's worth a lot. Imagine having the whole town get a free education, be prosperous, not be behind on their mortgages or credit cards, and be really a town of independent business people.
And this can happen very quickly, can it?
Yep.
Okay. Simple, straightforward answer there. Carl, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. We got to say goodnight.
Okay,
you're going to be on again on the 25th. And I want to tell the listening audience to go to myclads, that's myclads.com, or lawmall.com. Those are good starting points to get to two of 100 or more websites that Carl Pearson has. And you've got videos on YouTube also if they Google your name next to YouTube, that should bring something up, right?
Yes, and from my website, carlperson.com, there's direct links to my videos.
Okay, very good, very good. All right, Carl, thank you. I wish you a wonderful...
Thank you, Tom. We'll talk later.
A good night, and yes, we'll talk soon. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and tonight's special guest, Carl Pearson. Now, that last name is spelled P-E-R-S-O-N, like person, but the pronunciation is Pearson. And I encourage you to go to myclads.com or lawmall.com. Now, special thanks to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Doug Newsom also, Seth Hendrick on the sound, Carl Pearson for making it to the show tonight, Drew Raines for calling in, and you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.